This is WOR New York. Stay tuned for In Conversation.
First, this bulletin from the WOR newsroom. Six members of one family have been found shot to death in their nightclothes in their expensive home in Amityville, Long Island. The only available information at this moment, according to the Amityville Village Police, is that the victims have been identified as members of the DeFeo family. They were found by a 23-year-old son, Ronald DeFeo, who is believed to be the only surviving member of the family. Six members of the family found shot to death in their home in Amityville, Long Island. We will have further details on the 11 o'clock news.
Hey, welcome to the Crack House Chronicles. I am Donnie, your host, and with me is a man who may not be funny, good-looking, or smart, but, well, I forgot where I was going with this. It's Dale.
Well, none out of three ain't bad.
What's going on, buddy?
What's up, man? I'm so happy to be back.
I am glad to have you back.
It's awesome.
Man, down with the COVID and back.
I'm back.
Man.
Yeah, it wasn't really bad, just couldn't get them around nobody, so yeah. You know, but everybody's good and kicked out on that, so we just we're ready to back in rock and roll. I mean, your interview was really killer. Sorry
Thank
I couldn't
you.
Be here, but
Thank
but it was really good.
Well, I appreciate you letting me go ahead and do it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, we had Todd waiting.
What do you mean letting you? I didn't let
well,
you insisted.
Know, well, Todd was great.
Yeah.
We had him booked for a little while to do this, and man,
yeah, definitely didn't want to lose that chance. So yeah. And it was great.
Yeah, good interview.
Yeah.
And maybe have a follow-up on that sometime soon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. You got any good shout-outs or anything to inform us on?
I do. I have a big old shout-out. We want to be a big old shout-out to Jennifer Orquette. She dropped a big old chunk of change in her jar back at Christmas, and somehow or another you've overlooked that to let me know to give that shout-out.
Well, we took a couple weeks off, and
yeah.
I'd had it wrote down, and I forgot about it.
And so between moving the studio and all that stuff, we just did it, but we want to make sure we get that in there, and I hope I keep talking in my mic. And we just want to make sure she knows it is very, very, very appreciated.
We thank you, Jennifer Orcutt.
You are awesome. And since doing that, won't you send Donnie or email us your address, and we will send you some cool stuff. I'm sorry.
Just email me at crackhousechronicles@gmail.com, and Jennifer, I'll send you something really cool.
Yeah, get in touch with us. You deserve it. You're awesome. Thank you so much.
Yep. Anything else you want to talk about before we get started?
No, just happy to be here, man. It's Friday night? We're recording on a Friday night.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good day, and I'm feeling good, and I'm just tickled to be here.
Yep. And if anybody wants to go ahead.
All you guys, I'm sorry.
Oh, and if anybody wants to be like Jennifer and go to the website and drop some change in the tip jar, leave us some gas money.
Yeah.
By all means, do it.
Yeah, we appreciate it because we don't get much of nothing.
No. Sell a few T-shirts and some mugs and things like that.
That's right.
You can check out the store page and buy you something.
We are self-financed most of.
It helps keep the light bulb on here in the crack house.
Yeah, it's a little bit dim. It brightened up at Christmas, didn't it?
It did, man. Jennifer really helped out a lot.
I appreciate you.
Yep. And if anybody wants to go to Apple Podcast and click on that 5-star and leave a rate and review.
Or Spotify, you can go on there and leave a rating now.
Absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yep.
A lot of folks don't know about that. And if you don't, it's not on yours, you just need to update your app.
Yep. And if anybody does that, we'll give you a good shout out.
That's right.
We appreciate y'all guys.
We some shout outers.
Oh, we'll give credit where credit is due.
That's right.
And we're 3 minutes in, somebody's going to complain.
We'll let them complain. I'm just tickled to be here.
Man. No, I'm glad to have you back. I was lonely.
Lonely at the top of it.
It is. And I'll tell you, when I was doing the interview with Todd, I done the interview, then I went back and recorded the intro part and, you know, just tied it all together. I went through it like 6 times to try to, you know, get the intro just right and what I was going to say about you and everything. So
yeah, to clean the Xbox out and all that.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
Well,
I really appreciate the kind words, brother.
You're welcome, man. All right, enough of that.
All righty.
We're going to get into our episode, man.
Let's do it.
And Dale, this week, this is our 96th episode.
96.
We're pushing 100.
Man, that's really cool.
Yep. And this one, we are doing the DeFeo family murders.
DeFeo.
Ronald DeFeo Jr., to be exact.
That's right.
And just a little bit of backstory on the DeFeos. They were a family of 7, and they purchased a house in 1965,
right,
Ronald DeFeo Sr. and his wife Louise, and they had Ronald Jr., which I think some people called him Butch.
Yeah,
and they had a daughter Dawn Allison, son Mark, and another son John.
Mm-hmm.
And Dale, these six members of the family, they were murdered in their sleep.
Yes, they were.
In the early morning hours of November 13th, 1974. That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, that house they bought, it was on 112 Ocean Avenue in Amity, Long Island.
Yep.
Or Amityville, I'm sorry.
Yep. Now, the DeFeo family, they were originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Right.
And Ronald DeFeo Sr., he was working as a service manager at his wife Louise's family car dealership.
Yeah. Her father was a big-time Buick dealer in Brooklyn.
And Ronald Sr., he even dubbed the family's home High Hopes. I think they had a sign outdoors and outside on the house called High Hopes. And they moved from Brooklyn, and that's when they bought their house, and they had High Hopes, Dale.
But
everything wasn't too good in the family, though. Their problems wasn't even paranormal.
No.
You know, because they made a movie about this.
Yep.
Amityville Horror, that, you know, it's not really related to what we're doing today, but it wasn't anything paranormal.
No.
Ronald DeFeo Sr., you know, this is the dad. He was working at the car dealership, Dale. And he was a verbally and physically abusive man.
Yeah, he kind of ruled with an iron fist, that kind of dad.
Yep. And he was physically abusive toward his wife and the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And besides Louise, his main target was Ronald Jr.
Right. And, well, you know, he was the oldest, so, you know, he was going to be the whipping boy.
Yeah. But Ronald's friends, they were afraid to go over to the house because they had seen Ronald Sr. just fly. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just fly into a rage and hit Louise or Butch or any of the kids.
Wow.
So, you know, he was a bad dude.
Yeah, that's not cool.
And they said he was always yelling, and Butch was even bullied at school, where he was beaten up a lot and called fat.
Yeah, fat and fat back and kind of stuff. You know how that is. It's not bullying. It's not cool either.
And Ronald's father, he tried to get him to stand up to himself and fight back to the bullies, but I don't think it went too well.
Yeah, he's probably doing a lot of tough love stuff, you know. Yep. Like, well, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You need to do this and do that. And probably went well overboard with what he was trying to get across, and probably in his mind it wasn't as bad as he thought, but I'm sure it was worse.
As Ronald Jr. got older, Dale, his temper got worse than his father's.
Mm.
He and his father would often get into fights.
You know, they'd be butting heads. Yeah,
it's kind of like two alpha males in the house kind of thing.
Exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, and Ronald Jr., he was described as unpredictable. His temper would flare for no reason at all, and his parents became concerned that, and they even sent him to a psychiatrist.
Yeah, but he didn't want no part of that.
No, huh?
He's like, man, I don't think I need that. And he refused to go.
And they just, I think they just bowed down to him and started just giving him whatever he wanted.
Yeah, they just, well, they tried other things, and nothing seemed to be working, so they just made it even worse when they just, you know, just, like you said, give him what he wanted, and, you know, and just basically, I don't want to say buying him off because that sounds bad, but, you know, just giving him everything and anything he wanted.
Just, like, I don't know, pacify him maybe?
Right, yeah.
Kind of thing. And they even got him a speedboat.
Yeah, not a cheap one either. It's like a $14,000 speedboat.
So you're looking back in the 70s.
So when you, what do you call that?
Calculate inflation?
Yeah, when you calculate it up, that's about $100,000 now.
$100,000 speedboat?
Yeah.
Today?
Yeah.
That's a nice speedboat.
That's a nice one.
Yeah.
Which they live right there on the water. I bet that was cool.
You got to be, because it was
the boathouse, no?
Yeah, they had a boathouse and everything.
Right.
When Ronald Jr. was in high school, he was asked to leave.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and he began to use LSD and heroin.
Mm.
And his behavior got unpredictable and even more violent.
I'm sure it wasn't going to get better for that. That's not a very good, either one of them, plus mixing them together.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this, there was one time he was on a hunting trip with some friends, and he aimed his rifle at a man he knew since childhood.
Mm.
And the man left when Ronald Jr. saw his friend later that day, and he asked him why he left so soon.
So basically threatened to kill him and then ask him why he left.
Yeah.
Yeah, like well, he didn't think nothing about it.
Point a gun at me, maybe?
Yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah. Now, when Ronald Jr. turned 18, he began working for his father.
Right.
And he was given a weekly paycheck, Dale, whether he showed up to work or not.
So basically he's getting a salary.
Yeah, he was just getting a,
he's getting a salary to work at the dealership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Butch worked in the service department. He was doing oil changes and tune-ups and washes, I guess, just doing anything back there.
When he done anything.
In the shop part, I guess. And he admitted later that he took advantage of working for the family.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, usually if you're working for your family or something, some kind of thing, yeah, you're going to have to work as hard or maybe sometimes harder than the regular employees just because they expect that much out of you. But that wasn't the case here.
Mm-hmm.
He just kind of done what he wanted. And for them just trying to keep him happy, they just paid him and he worked when he wanted.
And he got paid whether he showed up or not.
Right.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he once told a psychiatrist that he could do whatever he wanted because the job, because of his father, was the boss.
Right. And nobody wanted to make him mad, you know?
Yep. And there was a bar called the Chatterbox, and there was a lady that worked there. Her name was Deborah Constantino.
Constantino.
Yeah, and he would, you know, Butch would go in there and get beers and things like that, and she even said that he was usually a nice guy except for when he drank.
Mm.
And she recalled him throwing bar stools and pool cues.
Mm. And he's probably on heroin and acid.
Probably was. And Ronald Jr. had a girlfriend at the time. Her name was Sherry Klein. And she recalls an incident when he went to her apartment with some friends, and they got pretty rowdy when she tried to calm him down. And he shoved her across the room.
Mm.
And she reportedly climbed through a window and went to her parents' house to get away from him.
Yeah, so this guy's he's got a trigger temper.
I think if he's on drugs or something or drinking, something's triggering.
It's that much quicker, yeah.
His mind is going to, yeah, like you
get
said.
Violent really quick.
Yeah. Now, Dale, there was one time the neighbors, they described an incident with a woman named Mrs. Nemeth.
Right.
And she said that Ronald Jr. accused their daughter of throwing rocks at a religious shrine that they had in their front yard. And when she insisted that her daughter wouldn't do anything like that, Ronald Jr. got angry and started yelling at her. And he said if she were a man, he would have punched her in the face.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah, temper.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't punch her in the face.
Yeah, me too.
Now, we're going to get up close to the time of the family murders, Dale. And in just the weeks leading up to the murders, Ronald Jr. threatened his father with a gun.
Yeah.
During an argument. And his father had trusted.
He didn't just threaten him with a gun. He put a shotgun to his head and pulled a trigger.
Yeah.
But it just didn't go off. Whether it was. Now, I've heard two different things where it just didn't go off and it malfunctions, or I don't know. So I don't know if it was. Maybe it wasn't loaded or just he was just lucky that day.
Yeah. But anyway, he threatened his father with a gun.
Yeah.
And what it was, his father had trusted him with making a $20,000 deposit from the dealership. And Ronald Jr. said that the money was stolen. But, you know, his father, Ronald Sr., didn't believe him.
No.
And when the police questioned him about the robbery, he was described as being uncooperative and even getting violent.
Right. And the thing about that thing, you know, if we've read and seen a couple of different things. This is a big deposit for a dealership, but it was like only, what, $1,200 cash and the rest was checks or something, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, it's kind of odd that you would really put that much on the line for $600 a piece. But apparently they did.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah. So
kind of odd to me.
Yeah, it is kind of odd. But, you know, I'm not buying the getting robbed.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
No. But now in November of 1974, Ronald Jr., he was 23 years old and still working for his father.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on probation at this time. He had pled guilty to having a stolen outboard motor. And Dale, he admitted he kept the job at the dealership because he could come and go as he pleased, like we said. Plus, he needed to pay.
Pay stubs for his probation.
Yes, that's right.
Well, yeah. Hell, he had it made. Why would he quit?
Exactly. I mean, he got
didn't
to work.
Didn't have to show up, really.
Yeah, he got paid whether he showed up or not.
Right.
Dang.
He had it made.
All right, now, Dale, on November the 13th, Ronald Jr. left early for work.
Yep.
And he stopped at a luncheonette to pass the time as he waited for the dealership to open.
Yeah. I think it was like 6 in the morning, so it was kind of odd.
Yep.
Anyway.
And he left work early to meet with his girlfriend, Sherry, and he also met with a friend named Bobby Kelski.
Mm-hmm.
And he complained to both of them throughout the day that he wasn't able to get in touch with his family. And he said that all the cars were in the garage, but that no one was answering the phone.
So I wonder how he knew that.
I don't know. He even called home in front of his girlfriend.
Right.
And at 6 p.m. that day, he was sitting at Henry's Bar. This wasn't too far from the house.
Right.
And he tried to call home again and complain to his friends about getting no answer.
Right. So he's been complaining since 6 o'clock that morning that nobody's answering the phone, and he's really worried about him. Of course, and he's right there at the bar near his house, but he went to go check on anybody.
Exactly. That don't seem weird at all.
No.
And he said he's going to go home and break into the house through the window. And around 6:30 p.m., he returned to the bar and called out to the patrons, you know, all the people in the bar, and said that his parents had been shot.
Said, y'all got to help me. I think my parents have been shot.
So he's going to go back to the bar and tell them they've been shot and not call the police.
Right.
That just don't make no sense.
Not odd at all.
Yep. And a group of his friends left the bar with him.
Right.
And they went to the house, and they discovered that the family was all dead.
Yeah, a friend of his actually went in to found his parents dead.
Yep. And a friend of his, like Dale said, Joseph, I guess this is how he pronounced his name. His name was Joseph Yeser.
Yeser.
Yeah, Y-E-S-S-I-R, Yeser.
Yeser.
But anyway, he called the police.
Right.
And the bodies of Ronald Jr.'s entire family were found dead.
Right.
And they were lying, all dressed in their, I guess, pajamas or nightclothes or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
In their beds. Now, the deputy chief medical examiner, his name was Harold Edelman. He would later determine that the DeFeo family bled to death in their beds due to gunshot wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the murder weapon was a 35 caliber Marlin rifle. The parents were shot twice and each of the children once. Ronald DeFeo Sr., this is the dad, he was 43 at the time. He was shot twice in the lower back. One bullet exploded into his kidney and exited his right nipple on the bed.
Mm.
And the other entered the base of the spine and was lodged in his neck.
Just think about that. It went all the way up, straight up through him, right?
Dang.
So I guess whoever, well, I guess when he was shot, they probably come to the door, standing at the foot of the bed, and shot him, you know, and him laying in the bed. So it would go parallel right through him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Mm.
Now, Ronald Sr. couldn't have been alive for just a few minutes after being shot. And the waistband of his shorts was pulled down a bit, indicating that he had moved upward as he died.
Right.
You know, trying to struggle
slide
to
slide up, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Ronald Jr.'s mother, Louise, she was 43. She was also shot twice. And the bullets entered her right flank of her chest. And one bullet landed on the mattress, and the other came out of the middle of the chest and re-entered her left breast and wrist. So I don't know if she had her arm tucked under or what. I don't know.
Yeah, almost have to.
Yeah, you think. And the bullet shattered her rib cage, splintered bone, and destroyed most of her right lung, diaphragm, and liver.
Wow.
And even though she was face down, her chest was slightly raised from the bed, and her body was turned to the right. And the medical examiner said that she could have been alive for several minutes after being shot, even up to 10 minutes. And her position indicated that she may have woken up, raised her body off the bed, and possibly looked toward the bedroom doorway toward the killer's direction.
Well, you'd think so, especially if a damn rifle goes off in the middle of the night.
You're probably going to see a flash.
You know, especially you hear it twice, you're going to jump up and look. You know, I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, because Ronald Sr. was right beside of her, and he shot him twice.
Mm-hmm.
So she had at least, you know, a few seconds.
Did they determine which one was shot first? Was it the father that was shot first?
Everything I've heard, that was the order that he was shot first.
So you'd think that the mother would have.
She might not have had time to get out of the bed, but she definitely would have had time to spin her head around to look, see what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, damn, you think how loud that'd be?
Golly. Now, Mark, he was one of Ronald Jr.'s brothers. He was 12, and John was age 9. Both were shot in the back at close range. And the medical examiner determined that the killer stood between the beds less than 2 feet away. And just described the wounds. The bullets penetrated the liver, diaphragm, lungs, and heart of both boys.
Mm.
And the bullets went through the boys' mattresses and into the box springs. John, who was 12, his spinal cord was severed, which may have caused involuntary twitching of his body. Can you even imagine?
Right. Now, what they're saying is these kids were still sleeping, right?
Yeah.
So how in the hell? We're going to talk about this sometime. I mean, here lately, but, you know, the noise thing, that bothers me.
Yeah.
Because you know how loud a rifle is. And then they're not in the same bedroom, as the parents.
And uh-huh.
I know they were on the second floor, but I'm not sure where the parents' bedroom is. I'll look right. But I was just wondering how far he had to travel before he shot them, how much time they would have had if they had heard something.
Yeah.
You know, would you get out of bed? Would you stay in the bed? Would you been scared? You know.
Yeah. I mean, if you shot the parents first, would the kids have woken up to the shot?
You would think so.
Yeah, but, you know, kids sleep through anything.
Yeah, but damn, that's a rifle, dude.
Yeah.
That's and, true. You know, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but they done tests later on this rifle when they said a single shot of the rifle could be heard up to a mile outside.
You know it's got to be loud in.
In a house?
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. So, you know, we'll keep going, and then we got questions about this stuff.
But now, Allison, Ronald Jr.'s sister, she was 13. She was shot once in the face from less than 2 feet away. And she may have turned around and saw the muzzle of the gun. And the bullet entered her left cheek and moved to her right ear. It then torn into her brain and damaged her skull. And the bullet exited, ripped through the mattress, hit the back wall, and ricocheted to the floor.
Now, from what I can see, the parents and the two brothers and the youngest daughter were all on the same floor.
Okay.
On the second floor.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, Dawn, she was 18. She was shot in the back of the neck from 2.5 feet away. The bullet entered just below her left ear and blasted through the left temple onto her pillow, and the left side of her face collapsed.
Mm.
Brain particles mixed with blood was saturated all over her pillow.
I can't imagine.
I just don't know what went through him.
No.
I mean, you know, he would get crazy and violent, but damn.
Right. So basically they're saying that what happened is everybody was sleeping this night, and Ronald Jr. was in his room. You know, we left out some parts where, you know, with all this money he was getting, he had a major gun collection, and, you know, he had a new car. He spent a bunch of money on car and drugs and stuff, but also on some guns. So he had a semi-arsenal in his room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was up in the middle of this night, and I don't know what triggered him on this night, but I guess maybe he was just in there thinking about his daddy pissing him off or something. And this is probably at about 3 o'clock in the morning is when all this happened, and, you know, that's when he decided to go and said he walked to his mom and dad's room and then stood there at the door for a while. And then that's finally when he started just open fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said that once he did it, he couldn't stop.
Yep.
Which is awful.
Now, Ronald Jr., he told police that he stayed home from work the day before with an upset stomach.
Right.
And he had watched a late night movie, and he told him it was called Castle. No, actually called Castle Keep. And he fell asleep around 2 a.m. in the TV room.
Yeah, so this is what I'm telling the cop story, right?
Yes. Okay. And he woke about 4 a.m. with pains in his stomach and said that he saw his brother Mark's wheelchair outside the bathroom door.
Right. Yeah, he had broken his leg playing football, so he had was doing like a lot of therapy and stuff, and that's why the wheelchair was there.
So he said he saw the light in the bathroom on.
Well, and heard a total of flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he was well-rested from the day, so he decided to go to work.
Yeah, so he was up at 4 o'clock and then decided to go to work early. So he left, got there about 6 o'clock, which makes no damn sense. He went to a luncheonette to wait to go to work. So I was up at 4 and decided, oh, what the hell, I'm already up. I can't sleep. You know, I fell asleep at 2, woke up at 4. I think I'm just going to work.
Yep.
Which I hate going to work anyway, but I'm going to work. Oh, get to work. Sorry, work's not open, so let me go to the luncheonette and wait for them to open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all believing this.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Ronald Jr. changed his story a lot. Now, at first he told that the murders had to have been committed by a man named Louis Fellini.
Yeah.
And he said he was a mafia hitman. And he said that Fellini and his wife had lived with his family for a little while after the house burned down in Brooklyn. And he said that Fellini had a key to the house in which he buried in a box of money and jewels. But Ronald Jr. also said that he had a violent argument with Fellini after Fellini and his wife moved. And he said Fellini criticized a paint job that he had done for the dealership. And he described throwing a brush at Fellini, breaking the window behind him. And he also called Fellini expletive. And he said that his father told him that Fellini was a professional hitman and that Ronald Jr. didn't know what he had done by calling him names.
Mm.
So
now he's putting it on a hitman.
Yeah, exactly. He's putting a murder on somebody else.
Right. And then at first, you know, they were kind of buying this that this kid didn't do it. So they had even enough to where they thought they need to put him in police custody just to protect him from this so-called hitman.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he thought, well, if he's killed all these people, he's definitely going to come back to get you.
Mm-hmm.
So far, they're buying it a little bit, I think, or at least he thinks they are.
Now, Ronald Jr. also said that 2 weeks before the murders, during the argument about the $20,000 robbery, you know, that his him and his father got into,
right.
His father said that not only did he have to worry about this phony robbery, but he also had to worry about losing a friend, meaning Fellini.
Hmm.
He said that Ronald Jr.'s argument with Fellini put him in a position where he felt like Fellini, that if anything happened to Butch, that he was going to kill Fellini's entire family, pretty much. And Ronald Jr.'s father told him that now because of Ronald Jr., he had to watch out for Ma and the kids.
Right. So he's trying to set it up where he thinks Fellini come to give him a reason to come kill everybody.
Exactly. But now as Ronald Jr. got to talking to investigators, Dale, he got to telling them about some of his criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he even admitted to burglarizing a neighbor's home with a friend to steal antiques to sell.
Right.
And he even admitted to using heroin and told them about being on probation. And when asked about how he was getting away with using drugs on probation, Ronald Jr. told him that Don was providing him with the urine samples.
Right.
And he even said in his confessions by saying that he wanted to be completely honest with him.
So he's trying to tell him everything he can without telling him he killed everybody.
Yeah.
Telling him for everything else.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Ronald Jr. kept emphasizing that
Fellini had hit a box.
Yeah, he had hit a box. And with some money and jewels in it, and he said that the box was gone or empty, then
they knew that Fellini had been back. Of course, you know, they never found no box.
Yeah.
So he's still trying to put it off on Fellini.
Now, Ronald Jr.'s grandfather, this is Michael Briganti Sr. This is the one that owned the car dealership.
Right.
He arrived on the scene with his son-in-law, Vincent Procida. And they were both asked about Ronald Jr. and Fellini. And his grandfather said that he knew Fellini and that he was a great guy.
So all this is made up.
Yeah, stuff. Exactly.
So he didn't know where he lived, or he didn't know his phone number. But he knew he was a great guy.
And even Vincent Procida didn't think Butch was capable of committing the crimes.
Yeah.
Now, police continued to search the DeFeo home, and Dale, they found the .35 caliber Marlin rifle, and it wasn't among the firearms in Butch's room, but in a separate box with a .22 caliber rifle.
Hmm. Yeah. Wait a minute, because now some stuff that I found today, they said, you know, he got up about 3 o'clock in the morning, went in there and shot the dad, shot the mom. The two brothers, the sisters, killed everybody. Then he went and took a shower, got it all cleaned up,
yep.
Put his bloody clothes in a pillowcase along with the rifle. And when he drove to the so-called luncheonette or whatever that morning, he actually drove to Brooklyn and threw that bag into a drainage, not a manhole, but a drain.
Yeah.
And so this is a little bit different there, so I'm not sure. Now, they did say they found the box that the rifle should have been in, you know, like where he had bought it or whatever. Found the box for a .35 caliber Marlin rifle, but I don't know. So I don't know which one's which.
It's a little bit of contradiction going on there.
Right, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now they said after finding the murder weapon, the police focused their investigation on Ronald Jr. And when the police questioned him again, he continued to insist that they needed to find Fellini. And when asked if he ate dinner with the family that night, they found Ronald Jr.'s attitude toward his family wasn't that of a grieving son, but a big brother.
Hmm.
And Ronald Jr. said that he didn't eat dinner with his family that night. And when asked why, he said that it was because of his mother's lousy cooking.
Yeah.
And that she made some brown shit in a bowl for dinner, and he wasn't going to eat it.
Oh, that's, Lord.
Yeah. And when asked about his family, he had nothing nice to say. He described his brothers Mark and John as fucking pigs. And he said that he shared a bedroom with them and that they left it a mess, and they usually left toilet paper hanging off the toilet and shit on the back of the seat. And
my God.
Yeah. I mean, he had nothing nice to say about his family at all.
He's not helping himself out here a little bit.
And even when asked about Dawn, he even described her as a fat fuck.
Wow.
Who played her music too loud. And he said that when he yelled at her to turn it down, his father would intervene and hit him. And he had nothing to say about Allison, the other sister.
Right. I dang. Saying his grandfather was a cheap bastard.
Yep.
Just took advantage of him, stole from him any chance he got.
Even though he was getting a check for free.
Yeah, really. Dang this guy. Now, this is right after everybody's been killed. You just go talk to them, run them in the ground like dogs.
But yeah, his family, you know, been killed, and yeah, he was being negative.
Right.
And police told him.
Yeah, I was a little more negative, I think.
And Dale, the police told him that they found the murder weapon and the ammo. They also said that his family was determined to have been killed between 3 and 4 a.m., so they could not have been killed while Butch was at work.
You know, that kind of makes a little more sense that if they did find the rifle, because they knew it was a 35 caliber Marlin rifle pretty quick.
Because
of the, and if he had thrown in a drain somewhere, it would took him a little bit to figure it out. I mean, I guess you could look at the casings or whatever and figure out, because it's like a lever action, right?
Yeah.
Or something, so there'd be casings in there, but they could figure it out. But it makes more sense that they knew that really quick if they actually had found it.
And the bullet fragments, you know, they could determine what it was.
Yeah. They also found out, you know, that the murders happened between 3 and 4 a.m., so they knew it wasn't after Butch had went to work like he tried to play it off.
Yeah.
So they're narrowing it down a little bit, and his story's just falling apart here.
Yeah.
If it hadn't already fell apart. It's getting a little ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And then investigators were asking him, you know, if he was forced to take part in the murders, and they asked him if the two men forced him to get his hands dirty or whatever and kill one of the family members, and he just put his hand down in his head, you know, and told the investigators to give him a minute. And was like, what you got to do? Think about it? I mean,
exactly.
Then he said that Fellini and his accomplice weren't there that night, and it didn't happen that way. And then he confessed to murdering his whole family.
Dang. Now, during his trial, his attorney tried to mount an insanity defense, and he claimed that Ronald Jr. heard voices that told him to kill his family, and his family was plotting against him. He also claimed that he was possessed, and at one point he was shown a picture of his mother and claimed that he didn't know who she was. He also claimed that he had killed them in self-defense. Golly.
He's all over the place.
Yep, and when he first confessed to the murders, he admitted to getting rid of the evidence. He also made sure to call home in front of people he knew and complained to everyone he saw that day that the family was not answering the phone.
Right. So he's covering his ass, so he ain't too crazy here.
He shows some organization and planning, but it wasn't too good. No. I mean, it was just off the chart. Now, psychiatrist Daniel Schwartz supported the insanity plea, but Dr. Harold Zolin countered on behalf of the prosecution, and Dr. Zolin said that although Ronald Jr. was a user of heroin and LSD, he had an antisocial personality disorder and was aware of his actions at the time of the crime.
Hmm.
But Ronald Jr. was found guilty of 6 counts of second-degree murder in November of 1975.
Mm-hmm. Sentenced to 6 sentences of 25 years to life.
Yep.
And those were run consecutively, I think.
Yeah. And DeFeo, Ronald Jr. filed many appeals to and request to the parole board, but they were all denied.
Yeah.
Now, during the next years, he said that his mother committed the murders and that he didn't want to upset his grandfather by saying that Louise was the killer.
Right.
And he also said that a demonic female figure with black hands wearing a black hood handed him the murder weapon. God.
Yeah, he keeps getting crazier and changing his story all the time.
But he admitted he was under the influence of drugs in the TV room at the time. And Ronald Jr. also eventually admitted to drinking a fifth of scotch daily in addiction to the drugs.
Mm.
And he described his behavior around the time of the murders as out of control.
Yeah. You know, and he's even blamed Dawn to be the one that killed them all, and said that, you know, when he come in there and seen that she had killed him, he tried to get the rifle away from her, and it went off and shot her in the head.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to kind of go back before we get out of here about them all being face down in the bed.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that? You think didn't none of them hear the rifle? Or do you think it was
he made them
lay there?
I think he put them face down. He just didn't want to see their face.
Right.
I think he just didn't want to look at them.
If they got up, he made them lay down face down in the bed.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. You know, and Dawn, the oldest girl, the one that was shot in the head. She was the only one that was shot in the head.
Yeah.
And if you see the pictures, you know, her, she has a white headboard, and there's nothing on it, mm-hmm. if you look at it. So a lot of people are saying, you know, they were shot somewhere and maybe put back in the bed. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know how spatter would work, being because it's like basically shot straight down on her in the back of the head. So I don't know. And they're saying that actually in the girls, was there was so much blood, it was kind of hard to tell what was going on anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and she was on the third floor up by herself. So she would have had even more time to hear what the hell was going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty confusing. I mean, I don't know, but as far as we know, he killed them all.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been other speculation saying there's no way that he could have killed them all, and, you know, with the way that they say it happened. But I don't know what else could have happened. And it was, they even was saying that maybe it was Dawn had helped him because she had some unburned gunpowder on her nightgown and stuff, and saying, you know, maybe that's from her having a weapon. But, you know, I think that was the ballistics, you know, were saying that that just came from the muzzle, you know. That didn't happen that way either. Plus, I think they did say that it was all the same weapon, you know, that killed them all. So if he had help, it was the same gun.
Yeah.
Unless there were two of them. But I don't know. It just blows my mind that, you know, nobody got up and tried to run away. And, you know, even there was, you know, they went back and proved that there was definitely not a silencer used. And also they'd run samples to see if maybe the family was drugged and they were all passed out when he killed them all. And all that came up negative. It was definitely said there definitely was no silencer used. And they were saying that no drugs were found in any of them system.
Yeah.
So it's pretty strange, whatever the heck it was going on. And it's just hard to believe that nobody heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot to mention, even the neighbors said they didn't even hear any gunshots, but they did hear the dog outside barking.
I know.
So they hear the dog barking, but they don't hear this rifle going off. And it was like, what, 2, 3, 4, 8 times?
Yeah.
At least 8 times?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, I don't know, cut and dried, as you say. But there is some weird stuff going on here, you know. And I mean, I think the guy did kill them all. I don't know. I mean, I guess it really doesn't matter to the story, but it is kind of odd to me that nobody heard it. You know, nobody woke up.
Yeah.
Apparently. And if he did, like you said, it could have been, you know, made him didn't want to look at their face when he shot them, and maybe why he shot them all in the back.
Yeah.
Except for his one sister and that. Had to play her music too loud and he shot her in the head, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he had, like I said, had him face down because he didn't want to look at him.
Right.
But it's pretty much a dysfunctional family. And the family was described as, like I said, constantly fighting with each other and under the thumb of Ronald Sr.
Right.
And somebody even compared it to a pressure cooker.
Right.
And for Ronald Jr., just to eventually blow up.
Yep. And who knows? Maybe it was the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, when I was out with the COVID or whatever and watched 7,000 movies, I watched Amityville 2, The Possession, which is basically loosely based on this. And then I watched the other movie, the Amityville Horror, you know, and it was based on the people who moved into the house after all this happened. And then that's when I got curious and started going, well, what really did happen? Because I knew Amityville was based off of a true story, but I never really looked into the background. That's when I started checking into it and figured, oh, wow. So it was more, this story is actually, would be more related to part two of the movie, except for the movie gets real wide and a little bit goofy.
Yep.
So it's a pretty bad story, but, you know, this and then the other people move in a year later after all this, and that's when they're saying all the crazy stuff happened in the house. But, you know, did the crazy stuff happen and make this guy go crazy?
Yep.
I mean, I don't really get into that too much, but something happened to make this guy snap. It just blows my mind that nobody heard this damn rifle going off.
I know.
And I know I keep saying that, but it kind of bugs me.
I mean, you can Google this area and Google Maps, and I mean, the houses are close together.
Yeah.
I mean, it was right there. But Dale, whatever happened that night, Ronald Jr., he took it to his grave.
Yeah.
Because he passed away on March the 12th.
Right.
2021, just last year.
Right.
At the age of 69.
Yeah. And he still was changing his damn story.
And he was incarcerated at Sullivan Correctional Facility in Fallsburg, New York. So that's the DeFeo family murders Ronald DeFeo Jr.
Mm-hmm. Took them all out in one night.
Yeah.
Pretty sad.
But yeah, that's it, Dale.
Oh, man. I've enjoyed this.
Yeah, it's good to be back in the crack house doing an episode, man. All right, bud. We are going to get out of here.
Let's roll, brother.
We want everyone to be safe. Be careful, and please always be aware of your surroundings.
Because the next episode could be about you.
This is the Crack House Chronicles.